What's crazy is what stops most people from becoming a millionaire is that they never make $1. Yeah. And so what's crazy with AppSumo.com, which I started for $48 in a weekend, is that now today we'll do $200,000 today.
Yeah.
Today, which is insane to me, right? Like this year we'll do about $80 million top line revenue, which is unbelievable. And that all started from a PayPal button,
right,
and an email that I sent with no coding, no other people, no one, and one $12 sale.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. Most people will never become millionaires. Today's guest explains why. In his new book, Million Dollar Weekend, Noah Kagan shares the surprisingly simple way to launch a seven-figure business in 48 hours. Now, honestly, we got off to a rocky start with a pretty heated debate about energy drinks. And then somehow we got into conversation about what it was like working for a young, sword-wielding Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook. As one of the first 30 employees at Facebook, Noah actually was the one responsible for status updates, for mobile experience, and Facebook ads. But even after some seemingly successful contributions to the team, Zuckerberg ultimately made the decision to let Noah go. We talk a little bit about why in this episode. After being let go from seemingly a dream job, Noah really dove headfirst into the world of entrepreneurship. And I think things ended up working out okay for him now that he is the chief sumo over at AppSumo, which is responsible for over $80 million a year in top line revenue. Plus, he's got a YouTube channel with over 1 million subscribers, and now he is writing this book with one of the best business authors of this decade in Tal Raz. So he's an entrepreneur, he's a YouTuber, he's a taco connoisseur, he's an author, he's so many things, and this conversation reflects the variety of things that he likes to talk about, even if his energy drink taste is questionable at best. So let's go ahead and dive into this conversation that I had with Noah Kagan. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the episode of the Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I am making friends with the one, the only Noah Kagan. Noah, what's up, dude? Welcome to the show.
Dude, we're cheersing with the ghost.
Ghost. Wink, wink. It's a ghost.
I don't want to do it. So bad.
It's like the Vita Vegemin thing.
Dude, my go-to candy is Sour Patch Kids. Dude, what's your go-to like 7-Eleven candy?
Go-to 7-Eleven candy is usually not candy, it's more chocolate. Like the they have these, they're like chocolate covered peanut butter pretzels, like, you know, the peanut butter pretzels you buy in the fucking like barrels from Costco.
Yeah,
you get those and they're dipped in chocolate. Like those have become like
hell yeah, man,
they're so good. But Sour Patch is up there though in terms of like candy, like,
yeah
Sour Patch is,
dude, I'm a Sour Patch guy,
and this specific blue guy. Yeah.
This drink, though, not so good.
Dude, you know what? The first time I was literally having this conversation, me and Eric, before you walked in, because he was going to the garage to grab, we have Celsius and we have all this other stuff. We kind of energy drink connoisseurs at this
house. Hell yeah.
He was going out to grab a Celsius. I was like, we got some ghosts in the fridge inside too. And he was like, I'm going to go grab one of those. And I was telling him the same thing happened to me. I tried it. My wife got one and I tried it and I was like, that is way too much. No, thank you. And like 2 days later, I was like, Let me try it. Let me try drinking that again.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Bro, have you seen Celsius stock, by the way?
Recently?
Yeah.
No.
Celsius. So we had a guy at this office, Ullman. He still works with us at AppSumo.com. And he's like, bro, you got Celsius. I'm like, dude, I don't need another. Like, I get it. And he just kept buying it for the office. I think we alone helped their stock. But I think it's one of like the top performing stocks. Celsius Energy.
Day. Yeah. In I the past like year I thought or you were going to report that it was going down, because that's what I was going to say when I was looking at it. I don't know, when I first started really getting into Celsius, dude, it was like a year ago, they were trading at like a 15x revenue or something like that on the stock market. It's wild for a beverage company to be trading that high.
Dude, it's crazy. Up to year to date, 50%. And it's like the stuff doesn't...
50%?
Yeah, just that's actually not great, I guess, when you compare it to the rest of the S&P. But I think in the past 5 years... Yeah,
for,
dude. Like
for a new beverage company, though.
Yeah, like that's... Celsius. Don't. By the way, don't invest in anything I do, because all my stuff goes down. And I didn't buy this. That's why it's gone up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, dude, they just keep going up and up and up and up and up. And like I said, in a space that's that competitive, that's when it's super intriguing.
It's really
like,
interesting. How
do you, like, just jump in? It's seemingly just another energy drink company. You know, like when it's something like Prime, it's like you can see a direct correlation to the disruption in the market where it's like, well, this is clearly it's tied to a creator brand.
Totally.
Like that's the reason they were able to get it, because all the people that watch their shit are just going to buy theirs instead of Celsius now. But when it's Celsius, it's like, why did this one work? And there's, I don't know how many dozens of other ones that just came in and left or failed and just never made it to market or whatever. Just the one pops out and does
well. That's a lot of business too. There's definitely a timing component, but like who's sticking around? Who's figuring out like some angle of how to make it work? And it's generally like people that just persist. Like they find something like, okay, why is it this one? Like maybe it's a I know for Prime, it's distribution, right? They have Logan, obviously the big guys, but I think they have like, you know, the UFC sponsorship and they got distribution. They're in Walmart.
They spend $0 on marketing. Zero. I was listening to him on, I mean, it depends on if you would label their like brand deals that they've done with like athletes and different football clubs overseas and stuff, if that would count as marketing on the line items. But in terms of like actual dollars spent on advertising, it's $0. I was listening to him on maybe Chris Williamson. I don't know. I was listening to him on a podcast and he was talking through like how much they spend.
But
like,
you know, some of this stuff, it's like Elon's like, we don't spend any money on Tesla. But one, it's a great product. Prime tastes like shit. Right. Like I tried Prime last night. I guess in interviews, they always want to give me the bad drinks. Thanks. And I was Prime. I was like, this is disgusting. And at least the Tesla, they don't spend any money on ads, but it's just an amazing product. You want to tell other people about it. And I think that's a great part in businesses. It's like, how are you creating content? How are you creating e-commerce? How are you creating a service where people actually like, and maybe if you like disgusting energy drinks, you want to get amped up, you'll tell people to go do Ghost.
Hey, bro, by the time this gets down to here, you're going to be like, hey, can I get another can for the road?
Yes. Like, I know. I'm like jumping up and down from all the ghosts through my body. Dude, you see me next week on a YouTube video being like, ghost energy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's going to happen, dude. Like you're going to write it off for like 3 weeks and then you're going to be in a gas station. You. It's going to be next to something. You're going to be like, maybe I'll try that ghost one more time.
Buzzing. Yeah.
You'll see like the sour watermelon or something. Dude, and be like, yeah, that's the shit right there.
Yeah. I saw a crazy thing recently about the amount of caffeine in all these drinks and like how it's been increasing over years. So like the original Red Bull, I think it's like 80. I think it's
Than that. Like the little cans.
Yeah.
I want to say it's like 60.
Yeah,
like little 8 ounce cans or whatever.
That, like coffee is give or take similar. I think green tea is a little less.
Yep.
And then it's like Red Bull was that Bang, and these ones are now 200, 300. Yep. And they were basically.
Bang was overboard. Bang is 300.
I love Bang.
I was on the Bang train for a minute.
Dude,
bro.
Banged it?
In multiple ways, yeah.
And so now, but it's just kind of interesting that like to differentiate, you know, it's like Black Rifle Coffee, or there's also a coffee company. What's the coffee one that's like intense amount of caffeine? Like there's a specific coffee company that does the same thing.
Talking about super coffee or
not super coffee. It's about amount of caffeine. These guys have just like put so much in it.
I'm not sure.
And anyway, similar thing where how are you different? Death Wish. Yeah.
That is.
And so they put, I bought it. It was not that good. And honestly, it wasn't that good. And, but you know, just differentiating in different ways. And so I guess like upping the levels.
Well, Canada recently like banned it. Do you see that? There's a bunch of energy drinks now that are like blacklisted from being in Canada because they put a limit on the caffeine. They said, like, you can't go over 180 milligrams. Like, I don't know if you have your phone on you. If you can Google that, I would be interested to hear what it is. But I want to say it's, like, 180 milligrams of caffeine that is, like, the limit now. So all of the ones on the market that have 200 milligrams, which is all of Prime, Celsius, Ghost, like, a lot of the biggest ones are not going to be able to sell in Canada now. So,
I mean, the Canadians are nice people. I mean, like, sales are going to go down, what, 1%? Nothing? You know, like, sorry, we lost the Canadian. Okay, this is where I get canceled in Canada.
All of Alberta.
Canadians are awesome. I love Canadians. Actually, the Sylvie, who's with us, who's like, she's me online. She does all the social media. Canadian, great person. I would say, though, in differentiating, we're talking, you know, $1 million weekend business in general. What's interesting is also how are you differentiating? One of my favorite coffees, I drink it almost every single day. I need to get sponsored by these guys, is Comatier. You heard of Comatier?
No, never have.
So it's like, it's a funded company, which is kind of bonkers. They nitrous
like
oxide.
VC-backed?
Yeah. They nitrogen oxide freeze coffee into little pods, and then you heat up the pod and a little coffee pod comes out of it, not like a machine, it's just a little frozen pod, and you just mix the frozen pod with hot water it is the smoothest,
just like instant coffee from a frozen
pod. You don't put it in a machine, you just literally have a pod, it comes out of a canister, you put it with hot water, and it is phenomenally smooth. And this is how you know you built a good product. I was so concerned that maybe they'd go to business one day. I've like stockpiled.
Really?
Like I'm probably the number one non-distributor of their product. Like I have an outdoor freezer that is just like filled with Gomateer
coffee, just in case they run out of funding or whatever, can't get profitable.
Dude, I don't even know. And then with NoahKagan.com, my newsletter, I emailed out and said, hey, I love this coffee. If you want to buy it, here's the affiliate link and here's a non-affiliate link. And so now I have like a good amount of their coffee for a very long time.
Nice.
But it's also essentially differentiating, you know, just think of ways and it's life and business.
I just bought this coffee. I have not tested it yet. It's in my fridge. I think I got it yesterday, the day before, but it's called Dot. For Dot?
No.
It's an instant coffee as well. It's just like a little, still not growing on you yet, huh? It's like a little glass bottle that's just really concentrated coffee mix that you're supposed to just put a little, you know, teaspoon in with milk or water and just
mix it
or whatever. I haven't tried it yet, but it was just like, it's interesting that you said that because that's like the third or fourth coffee brand that I've seen recently that's going to this kind of instant coffee type of a thing. But I think because the K-Cup thing's played out.
Yeah.
Like now it's like when Keurig first came out, I was like, I'm all about Keurig. And then I started drinking real coffee and it was like, oh, I forgot that this tastes way better than Keurig coffee. And now it's like, I'm at a hotel and they have free Keurig coffee. It's like, yeah, I'm going downstairs and buying an actual coffee because it's not that good of a product. It was cool when it came out, but now it's like, I'd rather have good tasting coffee instead of like instant coffee. You know, so now they're doing like instant coffee, but it sounds like it actually tastes good.
It's phenomenal. So I love Comateer. Shout out Comateer. Hook your boy up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Ghost, ignore Noah and just the sponsorship's for me, not for him.
Hook up your boy Travis, please.
But you mentioned your book, dude, and that's kind of the reason you're out in Vegas and LA and doing this whole tour and $1 million weekend. I know this has kind of been something that you've been writing about for a long time. And this was like a blog article that you wrote on Tim Ferriss's blog that blew up. A
long time ago,
and then you did a couple of YouTube videos on it and those did really well. Was that just kind of the reason to just, hey, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and put this into a book for people?
There was a little bit of that. I mean, I think when you're doing business, and it's literally how I wrote the book too. It's like, how do you test this something that people want? Like if you want to do an energy drink and create something like Ghost or whatever it is, how do you... You can literally buy this stuff really cheaply from Amazon and make it yourself. Mm. Like soda water and some caffeine powder with a little bit of syrup. And you could test today. You could literally order on Amazon, you have it in 24 hours, and you could see, hey, can I actually drink it and can I get other people to buy it? So the same thing with Million Dollar Weekend, put out an article to promote AppSumo.com, our software deal site for solopreneurs. The article went insanely viral. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I've always dreamed of writing a book and specifically like, how do I help other people have the lives they want? And really, can you change your life in a weekend to have your own business and to be an entrepreneur? Hmm. And then I was like, okay, let me do maybe a few videos because that blog post went viral. Videos went viral. And I was like, okay, I wasn't ready to write a book for a very long time. I was just focused on running the business. Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of times I've seen a lot of business YouTubers or business writers. I like to call them fiction writers.
Mm.
Because you don't know
their
business.
They're writing on theory.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I have this business. I'm like, tell me about your business. Oh, you can't see it. It makes a lot of money. Okay, well, can you show me anything? Can I buy your products? Can you tell me? No. And so I wanted to keep starting new businesses like tidycal.com or senfox.com or sumo.com or all these different companies that I've started and then help other people and then feel more comfortable and confident that I'm like, yeah I have ways that have worked for me and others that I feel ready to put together in a book. And yeah, things came together during COVID where I wanted to do it. And I felt like there's no other book that's really going to help someone actually get a business going without more money, without funding and investments, and in a very short time, which everyone has a weekend. I know you got two kids. It's like, you don't have a lot of time for free stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that's my guess, especially if you have a day job that you don't
you're
like.
You're correct about that.
Yeah. You know, I had a day job that sucked. I fucking hated my day job at Intel and I wanted to change. And so it's like, oh, maybe this is something I can do with other people. And what was fascinating, this is something for everyone out there. When I first had the idea to finally put it together, I was like, okay, it's going to take some time and I want to have something that's going to take time and make an impact. Like I can give a book to someone and be like, hey, if you want to start a business, this is it. So I go to an agent, Lisa Demona, and I wrote up like my own proposal and she laughed at me. She's like, this is not, you're joking. Is this like a real thing or a serious thing? Is it like Ghost or is it, or is it like Comateer? Like the real good stuff or is it like this joke stuff? Dude, Ghost is gonna like do like a cancel campaign on me, but it's fine because like no one should be drinking this stuff. This is like, would you drink this like before you go to the hospital?
I drink this right before the gym.
Oh my god, dude!
It's a punch in the face, though. Hey, you know what? Speaking of like differentiation products, something I've been thinking about a lot lately is polarization, even on things like this, where it's like if you're going to create a product in a super competitive space. You kind of want that reaction
100%
almost where it's like a visceral where you first drink it and one person is like, that's awesome. And another person is like, this is dog shit. Get it away from me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people kind of compete for that messy middle where people are just like, oh yeah, this is pretty good, but it's not good 100%. Enough for the people who love it to you know, bump Celsius from their energy drink routine. So they just stick with Celsius. You know what I'm saying? So, but you're not going to probably buy Ghost. But bro, like I said, three weeks,
you'll
Ghost,
see it.
Send him.
Dude, like, get your boy with the Ghost. No, it's, I mean, what I've been thinking about, especially with business, $1 million weekend and helping a lot of people with business and starting my own, is now more than ever, businesses are copied so quickly. Just as you're saying, it's so easy to copy. So you either need to be the cheapest, or you need to be the most interesting brand, or the most expensive, or something that's really differentiated. So when you get copied, people are like, well, there's a unique thing about what's going on with that. And I do think with my book, what I'm proud of from seeing the results is that there's a lot of business books out there, but most people don't need the business advice. That stuff's kind of like almost table stakes. It's like they need the mental advice about what's holding them back to getting to the business.
Correct.
So yeah, it's been a fun process. And with Lisa, she laughed at me. And I think for all of us, we get rejected. Like maybe you don't get a guest, maybe you don't get the sale, maybe you don't get the promotion, whatever these things. And it's really test of if we want this stuff.
Right, right.
So then I spent the next year writing a proposal, taking all the things I've worked on. I hired James Clear, you know this guy, Tom and Cabot's.
Yeah, he's been on the show actually.
Is he? Yeah, James is amazing. I hired his writer, the guy who wrote his proposal, David Maldowar. And we spent a year putting together a proposal. And then Lisa signed it and all these other things. And 3 years later, we are here now promoting the book.
Yeah, dude. Well, how is that process working with the publisher? we'll clip this and air it.
The publishers are, it's an interesting industry, you know. It reminds me of like the real estate industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't understand what these realtors do for 3-6%. Does anyone?
Yeah, right,
what
right,
do
right.
they? So the publishers do add value in that. Like, there's been a press person who's been a little helpful. There's some status, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like, if you want to, yeah, like if someone said they went to Harvard, you still are like, oh, okay, that's serious. And if you think about, name literally 5 books that are mainstream that are self-published.
Yeah, right.
Like, okay, the Bible, one.
Yeah.
What's another self-published book?
The other one that I would put in the category, but it wasn't self-published. It was still kind of like hybrid published with Scribe, which was David Goggins.
But even that, he was published through Linecrest, right? So every major book is still published. And so there's something there where there's a lot more credibility.
Sure.
And honestly, to actually work with the publisher, it's hard to get in, right? You have to pitch all these things. Right. You have to have an agent. You have to have a proposal. And so there's a different level of, I'd say, quality and intention that go into like a mainstream published book.
Sure.
But yeah, the whole process is longer and harder than I expected. You know, I'm in YouTube world and AppSumo.com world where you put out a tweet and you make a video and you move really quickly. And, you know, how do you create material that is going to stand the test of time? Like the book, this print, when we printed it, like they're like, yeah, it's not, it can't change anymore. And at least unless you sell all these copies, which is tough.
Right.
But yeah, it's a long process. And so I think for everyone within all our businesses, content, Ghost, whatever it is, how do you validate along the way? And that's something we teach in the book. Like, how do you validate along the way you're doing something people actually want?
Yeah.
Because I can put out the version of the book that I originally wrote with Tal Raz. And Tal Raz wrote Never Eat Alone. Never split
the Difference.
Yeah, super. Yeah. You know, top 10 business books of the past decade. The original version we finished together, I gave it to some beta reader. And I'm like, this is just not very good. This doesn't even sound like you. It's like all these weird ass jokes. And, you know, through kind of validation with them and then noticing what they commented and liked and noticing what they were like, this is confusing, you know, has led us to finally 3 years later having a book that I'm really proud of that I do think and I've seen make a difference in people's lives.
That's kind of the big deal for me is like, I've been tossing the idea around in my head, at least more recently, about writing a book now that I've done almost 1,000 podcast episodes around like relationships and getting to know people and getting and figuring out these different, you know, tips, tools and strategies or whatever. Just like, you know, I feel like it's almost that time, but then it's just, I never wanted to put together a book just for the sake of saying that I'm an author. It was just like, if I do a book, exactly what you said, I want it to be something that I'm very, very proud of, where it's like, even if it didn't sell as many copies as I wanted to, I would still feel awesome about it and would still feel like, hey, it didn't sell as much, but like, I'm still really proud about the thing that we put together here, which is also another thing in business I don't think as many people think about, especially if you come from like the online marketing world where people are so obsessed with marketing that they forget to make product and like any sort of experience or focus at all, you know, and then they market shit product and then wonder why they get called scam artists. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or they don't have a product someone actually wants. And you know, for your book, you know, I think one, what are you saying that's actually unique, right? And maybe there's something you can answer. And then two, are you committed? I called Tim Ferriss and I've known him. I got to meet him before he even became famous, before his book came out. And I think that's one of the strategies in marketing that's in the later section of the book, which is called Grow It, which is like, how do you connect with pre-fluencers? How did I meet Tim Ferriss before he got big? How did I meet Eric Ries, Ramit Sethi, Drew Houston of Dropbox? Like, I got them before they were big, and now it's easy to be able to connect with them, like Ali Abdaal.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because one, it's like, what's the unique thing you actually have to say? And two, are you committed to working fucking hard? And that's what Tim was saying to me. He's like, this is no fucking joke. Look, anyone can write a book, but only a few people can write a great book, and only a few people can get a lot of people to read your book and take action on the book. And so are you willing to commit what it's going to take for that? And I wanted that. That was what, and I think for all of us, we have that in us. Yeah. It's just figuring when it's time and what thing it's time for.
Mm. When you were writing this, how much time in a given week were you spending on your businesses and all the other, you know, things that you have going on versus your book?
So the way I approached it is the way I approach all my businesses. I look for who's the best and I partner up with them. Like when I go to the hospital, I don't try to like cut my body open and then like do whatever the hell people do in the hospital that doctors do. I'm like, I go to the doctor that's recommended, or I go to the doctor that has good ratings. So the same thing with the book. I went and found the best business writer of the decade and I cold emailed him on LinkedIn. I was one of these LinkedIn people.
Yeah.
Here's my Calendly link. please have a call with me.
Would you be opposed?
Yeah. Yeah. Could we jump? Could I pick your brain? And got, you know, cold messaged him on LinkedIn, got on a phone call and convinced him of what my vision and dream was and what I think we can do with it. Gave him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then it was more him kind of digesting my information because he's the best writer in the world. I am a great marketer and promoter and I have good strategies, but I'm like a blogger and a Twitterer, and he's a great writer. So why don't I go and work with that kind of person, the best in the world, just like I did with the proposal writer. I found James Clear's guy.
Sure.
And that's why the book was able to sell for so well to a publisher. And so with Tall, what we did, how we approached it is he took the article that went viral with Tim Ferriss, took the proposal, and then we went in the woods for a week, just two bald Jewish guides. Like we just met and it was like, let's go to Asheville,
some
North Carolina.
Some real Silicon Valley shit right there, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it was no Wi-Fi really. And then we were in the woods living in a house and just like for basically, I don't know, 12 hours a day, 4 days, just like mapping out every single chapter.
Mm.
And then from there, a lot of it was him.
I was going to say also him getting to know you a lot more.
Yeah. My humor. Right. He would audio record everything and then transcribe it afterwards.
Mm.
And then he would really take first stabs at this stuff. And he would be like, no, this is bullshit. What you're seeing is actual total bullshit. And it's what I appreciate is I like being with people that challenge in respectful ways. The best people I've worked with at Facebook, the best people I've worked with at AppSumo.com to this day are the people who are like, I disagree with you and respectfully, and here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do that literally with almost every word. And so in terms of your question, how much time did it take? I would say the front loading to actually get the V1 of the book was about 12 months. And I probably spent half a day a week working on it.
Okay.
So he would take the majority of the heavy lifting from stories, narratives, there's a lot more to think about in a book.
Yeah.
I thought you just like put some pages, you get ChatGPT to write some shit. And anyone could do that, but to get a book that people are excited and want to, like, maybe it's ghost or whatever, you want to tell someone else about is a lot more of an effort. Like, what's the story? What's the unique thing you're saying? And so once that happened, that was about 12 months. It was about a month a chapter.
Okay.
And every week I'd spend half a day kind of editing what he would, and I'd give back to him all this, a Google Doc. Where it got intense for me was after he finished the first version, then I took it to beta readers. So we built this launch team, which has been one of the most fun parts, frankly, of the book process.
Yeah.
And I would get 20 people per chapter highlighting, what do you like most? What's boring as hell? What's confusing? Per chapter, 20 people, 10 chapters. And that was give or take maybe 14 hours a day of myself.
Wow. Okay.
Going through each and every almost word. We went from 65,000 words down to around 43,000 words.
Okay.
Really tightening the book to be like, no one, you know, there's so much material out there, right? There's so much material out there. And so what's the stuff that's really, really unique and golden and smooth throughout the book? And
it's so appreciated though, dude. Like that to me is the difference between me finishing a book and not finishing a book.
Yeah.
Is how much fluff is in there. When it's just like, when you're reading and like you're in one chapter and it's like, you get done with the chapter and it was a 40 page chapter and you're like, this chapter could have easily been 21 pages.
Yeah.
Why is it 40 pages? It said the same thing over and over and over and over again. And to your point, that's one reason to have the professionals involved, you know, or people that do that for a living, because they can spot that. Whereas you self-publish, it's just, you kind of just do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And your mom read it and like, she doesn't know, you know what I mean?
She did buy a copy barely. I was like, Mom, can you buy two? And she's like, no, just one. I was like, okay.
Why do I need two books?
I know. And I was like, okay, I'm going to ask Dad to buy another one. But yeah, I would say once we got to that first version of the draft, it was much more intense.
Yeah.
For about 2 weeks specifically, it was about 14-hour days. And my girlfriend flew in from Barcelona to be with me. And she was like, you're kind of ignoring me. And I was like, there's only one. Once you put the book out, it's there, right? It's all about telling people about the book. And I think for all of us, it's like, what's the project you're working on? And are you doing everything possible to make it great?
Hmm.
Right? With our YouTube videos, holy shit, man. Like, we'll take the same hook, maybe 30 minutes for like a 5-second hook. No joke.
Yeah.
Right. Or we'll take hundreds of thumbnail photos for one thumbnail. And then they don't even use that one. Yeah, they're like, right. We're doing it again. And so the same effort was applied to the things that matter to us, whatever that is for everyone. Maybe it's being a parent.
Yeah.
Maybe it's cooking. Maybe it's being behind the scenes in these shows, or maybe it's a book, whatever that is. And from that period is about 6 months of really just working with the customer. And this is kind of obvious stuff. Like, go get feedback from your customers. Like, what are they ignoring? What are they taking action on? And so I've done a lot of beta testing with them, beta testing with the chapter titles, beta testing with everything, the cover, the color of the book, to be able to package a product in the back of the book. To like the version we had was what we're like, okay, we'll just put something together. Mm-hmm. Then I went and worked with the beta customers, our beta launch team, and was like, what here stands out to you? What do you guys normally like to see? And then I went and studied all the back covers of every other most popular business book.
Sure, sure.
So we had them all laid out, and you could actually understand like, okay, James Clear did this over here. Tim Ferriss did this over here. Mark Manson did that over here.
Yeah.
Ryan Holiday does it this way. What's my way? What's the Travis way? What's the no? And we all figured out, but kind of working backwards from what's the best or working with the best. And then what does your customers actually get excited and read? So one of the readers, the beta readers of here, I actually put him at the top of the book.
Oh, nice.
This is a guy who's read Pat. He's a customer support guy in Poland.
Oh, that's cool. And, that's super cool.
And now he has a YouTube business doing YouTube optimizations and editing and things like that after reading the book.
Oh, and he's super fan, obviously, at
he's
that point.
Like, the best. People wonder, how do you get status, right? Mm-hmm. Or how do you get attention?
Influence.
It's influence, but I'd say it's because you've influenced their lives in some positive thing.
Yeah, no, I was saying like attention or influence, like all these things stem as a direct result of value that's
to their life, because no one cares about Travis or Noah. They care about their problem. And so have you done something? Maybe it's a book recommendation. Maybe it's not Ghost. Recommendation, you know, maybe it's something where that they've taken away something for themselves and they're like, I believe this person.
Right. They've gotten something, even if it's just entertainment.
Yeah, they had fun. They smiled at you.
Right. Exactly. You can entertain somebody. You can add something to their life that will over time compound into influence or attention.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so it'd be very helpful as you're launching a book as well.
Yeah. It's interesting because I come from Silicon Valley. Like I was just born there. It's totally lucky.
Yeah.
Totally lucky. And it's like, how do you apply some of the principles from these elite people in just other aspects of businesses? And so it's like, you can apply a lot of that into a book, which is like, how do you test things? Can you test your title? Can you test the cover colors? Can you test what it looks like online? Yes, you can. And then you can also go to customers and get beta feedback and then actually improve your things like that. And that can apply whether you're a basement business, a plumber business, whether you're doing a service business. It's applicable in all these businesses.
Being born in Silicon Valley, was entrepreneurship always the choice? For you, like, or was there like, I'm gonna go do this other path, and then entrepreneurship just kind of found its way toward you?
I always wanted to be rich. Like I think it's always fascinating when you go online, you go to YouTube, what's the thing you search? Or for me as a kid, I'd go to the magazine rack and I'd go to like Forbes and Fortune and like Red, I don't know if Red Herring was still around, Fast Company, these things. Yeah, and I always read them and I'm like, man, being rich is so cool, but I just didn't know how to get rich.
Yeah,
and I knew I wanted to be a part of it.
What did your parents do?
My stepfather is an engineer.
Okay.
My mom's a nurse, and then my biological dad sold copiers door to door.
Okay. So but all in like the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yours is where you grew up.
Yeah. And so I think most of us are raised with, you know, safe parents, middle class or lower income class. And it's like, okay, I'm going to be in that class and that's just where I'm going to stay. And I was like, I don't know. I think there's going to be another way. And I just didn't know how do you get that other way? So when I went to college, I was always trying businesses.
Yeah.
I was always swinging. I think this is such an important thing for everyone out there. Like, get going right now. Like, the number one takeaway from Million Dollar Weekend is now, not how. Number one takeaway by far. We survey every person after they read the book in our beta group. Number one thing. And I was just swinging a lot. And the most successful people swing a lot. You've done 1,000 episodes. Most people quit at one. And so just swing. Go and have, like, go do stuff. No matter what. Just stay at it. You know, everyone has a weekend to go change their life. And so I was trying all these things. And when I was graduating, I was like, how did everyone figure out what the fuck to do for a living?
Yeah.
Like, was there a class I missed that was supposed to tell me, like, hey, like, you're destined for this? I was like, I just wanted to be an entrepreneur and rich, but I don't know where to go. So I was literally going to go be a website manager for Wells Fargo.
Oh, sweet. That's a dream.
And you had to wear business casual clothing and go to some office.
What was your major?
I was an economics and business double major at Cal.
Okay. At Cal?
At UC Berkeley, yeah. And even that I barely got into. And I loved it. It was amazing. It was a great opportunity. I just didn't know what to do afterwards. And I didn't know how others figured it out. And you figure it out by just doing things. Find out what you don't like. Like, I built games for years and I hated that shit. I did payments companies for years. Hated that too. You know, I worked for other people. I was like, well, I kept getting fired. So that's not working. Yeah. But by doing these things, it eventually led me around 30 to be like, okay, let me start looking through what's the thread of all the things going down. But yeah, I ended up getting a job at Intel, which was just horrible. It was just like, it sucked. It was just like, I never want to be a desk life. I never wanted that desk life.
But where did Facebook come in? Facebook, on that timeline?
Yeah, man. Facebook came in. So I was at Intel and I kept starting things on the side. So for me, I didn't have, I don't even think there was Twitter or Facebook really. Facebook just got started. There was no Instagram. There was like no
2008
WhatsApp.
2008 or something?
No, no, no. 2004.
2004.
Like, dude, before you were born.
What, was Facebook even?
You know, like before.
Was Facebook around in 2004?
Travis. Yeah. Facebook came out in 2004. I was an RA. Like I was the person running in the dorms.
Okay.
And so I was on Friendster. Nice. And I've gotten to become good friends with the founder of that, Jonathan Abrams. And I was on that and I was like, this is cool. This is like a thing to connect. And all the people in the dorms were like, you got to get on Facebook. Hmm. I was like, what do you mean? Facebook? And so I got on and I was like, oh, this is great. You can like message people and you can do all these things. And I saw it was going to be big. And so at Intel, I kept swinging. So what does that mean specifically? Just to give people specific examples. Like I didn't do shit at Intel, for clarification. I was a supply chain optimizer. So what that means is I looked at spreadsheets and I just hit a few buttons because I set up macros, meaning automations. And I didn't do anything all day. Like I slept at my desk. I like basically figured out how to pretend like I was working without actually having to do shit. So that gave me time to work on side hustles. So I was doing networking events. So
there we go.
I just started asking, you know, built a network. I started just asking the smartest person I knew, who's a person in the Bay Area I should meet. So I asked this woman who I interned at Microsoft. So I asked Clara Shi, who's now a CEO at Salesforce, which is fucking crazy.
Wow.
I was like, who's a smart person you know? Because I met her randomly. She's like, oh, meet this Ramit Sethi guy. And I was like, okay, I'll go meet him. So I went out to lunch for him. And then I asked other people that same question, like, who's the coolest or smartest or most interesting person you should know? And I would just take them out to lunch or I'd bring them together.
Yeah.
Then I got to meet Blake Ross, the creator of Firefox. I got to meet Dalton Caldwell. He's now a YC Combinator president. And that was just from before they were even big. It was just asking people that question. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I kind of like doing this. Let me put on events. So I was like, I'm going to create a conference. I've never created one of those.
Yeah.
And so I created a conference, Community Next. And I just made it the way I wanted. I had basically like Hawaiian food. We had free Red Bull, free alcohol. And I invited all the speakers I wanted. Never done that before. Never. But it was just kind of swinging.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing it very cheap and very fast to see if it's something people wanted. And that's something that still teaches and I still use this day. But by doing that and then also creating websites, I created a lot of things that no one's ever used or seen. Like comegetused.com. comegetused.com. It was a used book exchange.
Oh, okay.
No one used that.
It could have easily been a porn site.
It could be. It sounds like that. But people used it in college and that died off. And then I did ninjacard.com, which was a discount card. Then I did collegeup.org, which was a college site, Craigslist for college students.
Okay.
Then I did HFG Consulting, which was college marketing for local business. So all these things I kept doing. And I was going to quit Intel because I was like, I can't do this anymore. Hmm. And randomly I saw on Facebook because I was using it all the time. And I think the best companies to go work for are the ones you use.
Yeah, sure.
Like the best problems to solve are your own.
Right.
It's just like, why not work on something you're excited to spend your days on? And I saw they had a job opening and I applied cold. I didn't have any special privileges or access. And what I did differently, and I did that at Facebook and I did it at Mint, and it's how I've hired what I believe the best people today. The easiest way to hire the best people is just look for the one person who's doing a little bit extra. And so when I applied for Facebook, I did a lot of mock-ups. And I said, here's your site, but here's where I'm noticing problems. And so when I submitted my application, I had all these mock-ups of, because I've been doing web stuff, like here's what I would change on your site.
Yeah, yeah.
So just a little bit more helped me stand out. And that's how I got to, you know, work directly for Zuckerberg, meet Dustin Moskovitz, Sean Parker, Peter Thiel, all these people.
Yeah. You were like first 20, 25.
Yeah. Number 30.
Number 30.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just for anyone out there.
And you shipped the status update.
Status update, Facebook ads, Facebook mobile.
So just a couple of things.
They've done pretty well. And it, you know, there's been around exceptional people like Mark Slee is exceptional. Naomi Glide, who's now a VP there, Box. His name is Bosworth. He's VP of, I think he runs Oculus. Chris Cox.
Oh, wow.
He's now the CEO, CTO.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. So just like, you know, I was around like pretty impressive people.
Well, it says a lot that a lot of those people stuck with it through the entire expansion too, to retain that type of talent.
Yeah.
You know, where they probably could have they could be the belle of the ball in any other company.
This episode of the show is brought to you by Indeed. We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is not to search at all. It's to match and match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need this platform, guys. I'm telling you, Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging candidates so you can connect with those people even faster. And it doesn't just help you hire faster. In fact, 93% of employers Agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And look, guys, one of the things that I wish I would have used Indeed for is this matching service. You can search and search and search and search and search all day long, but to actually be presented with quality candidates, like hiring a recruiter for you that's presenting people that has actually done the work to vet them and bring quality people in front of you, that work by itself is the fact that it's done by a software instead of like a team of high quality recruiters is pretty insane. So they leverage over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, which is why Indeed's matching engine is the best one that you can use. It's constantly learning from your own preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets at doing the job for you. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility over at Indeed.com/Travis. Just go to Indeed.com/Travis right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed here on the podcast. Indeed.com/Travis. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
Well, you look at, like, I mean, you have Charlie Cheever and Adam D'Angelo went and started Quora. Yeah, Dustin Moskovitz started Asana. Noah Kagan started AppSumo.com.
Yeah.
Shimmy, shimmy there.
The one and only.
Yeah, and, you know, YouTube star. You know, just different people. And I think that's one of the things I've learned through talking with billionaires and millionaires on my YouTube channel, as well as running my own business now for 14 years.
Yeah.
Is, like, if you can retain top talent and make it exciting for them to stay, there's an advantage in that. There's just a real advantage in just having people want to be a part of it. They have their own successes, so they're getting everything they want out of life. And that's definitely something Mark did, and I've been able to replicate that with AppSumo.
Okay, so you're working at Facebook. You enjoy it. Seemingly, everything's going well. Why leave?
I got fired.
Okay.
I didn't want to leave.
Okay.
But I did. I was frustrated there. Like, I was using a, you know, remember blogger.com?
No.
Holy fuck, I'm old. So blogger.com was like the original, like one of the original blogging websites, like the WordPress or Twitter. Okay. It was like super old school. Mm-hmm. And I read my old journals, and I was frustrated going to meetings where there was just like a lot of discussions. I was like, can we just go build stuff and make things? And when I started, it was like that. And as you get larger in a company, you work for a company, and the risk of not being an entrepreneur is you have zero control.
Yeah.
And I found that out very quickly when they fired my ass. And that was the right decision at that time. And it led me in my own path, but you don't have any control unless you have your own business.
Yeah.
And a lot of people at AppSumo.com to this day have great jobs that I think they like. That's what it seems like at AppSumo. And they have their own businesses. Like Amy has a flower shop and a hair salon. Yeah. Nick has teeth whitening. Annie has a marketing agency. Omen has and his wife have a facial studio.
Yeah.
A lot of people on YouTube have side hustles and freelancing. And so for me, with the time at Facebook, I was like, I just don't want to be an employee of Mark. And it's Mark's business. Mm-hmm. And Mark told me, he sat me down one day and he's like, he had like a sword. He would carry around a sword. It's fucking weird. The guy's weird. He's a genius, but weird.
Well, I mean, aren't all geniuses weird? It's kind of the mark of being a genius is that you're kind of a little weird.
They are. I worked at Microsoft. I got to spend time with Bill Gates. He's weird.
Yeah.
You know, there's
got to be.
Peter Thiel, I had dinner with him. He's weird and very, very bright.
Yep.
And for me, I just was like, there's something that didn't feel right. But
Mark sat you down with a sword.
Yeah, so he sat me down with a sword, and he's like, you need to decide whether you want to be a part of Facebook or the Noah Kagan Show.
Mm.
Because for me, I was still blogging. I was still blogging on okdork.com. I was still creating these events. Mm-hmm. I was proud of what I was doing, and I loved what I was doing, but I still had my own desire for my own thing.
Yeah.
And
he basically wanted your identity to be wrapped up in Facebook, not.
Yeah, there's no Noah Kagan. It's just Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg.
Sure.
And that's just something that just didn't align with what I really wanted long term. Like, they made the choice for me. And that's one of the hardest things in life is when you don't get to make the choice.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, if a girl dumps you, but you were going to break up with them, you're still frustrated. You guys know what I'm saying? You're like, oh, man, I was going to do it. And so I think with entrepreneurship, you have that ability to make these decisions.
Sure.
And so, yeah, they fired my ass, and it was still probably the worst day of my life, top 10, top five worst days of my life. And it was a frustrating journey from there for the next maybe five, six years to find myself.
Okay. So what did you do to do that?
I grasped and I chased and I was angry.
You're 30?
No, 24, 25.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, I was just out of college. Before, okay. So, like, okay. You know, most of my 20s, I was really bitter, and I was just trying to, like, you know, like all of us, we're trying to figure out, we're on a planet in space.
Right, right.
I don't know if anyone else thinks about that.
All the time.
Yeah. I'm like, we're a planet in space and doing and we've created amazing things like these microphones and not this drink, but like this book, these cameras, this YouTube world, this Twitter world. Like, we created some cool ass stuff. And so I just tried a lot of things. I tried a lot. I taught business in Korea. I worked on like scanner.com, S-E-A-N-R.com. I tried creating more conferences. I created like different networking events. And it was just trying so many different things. I went and helped start mint.com,
okay,
which was a pretty popular personal finance website. Mm-hmm. And I was just like trying all these things to eventually have my own business and eventually have my own freedom.
Got it.
And I wanted to make $3,000 a month. I was like, if I can get my own business going, it was just a long journey of and also trying to, how do we embrace who we actually are? Find out who we actually are and then embrace it. So true. Much of our lives are like, I'm not good at this shit. Yeah. I'm not good at this shit, but I'm supposed to fix it. Or it's like, no, maybe what are you good at? And how do you embrace that? How do you lean into the things you actually enjoy? And so it finally led to a lot of different things. And eventually I was like, I like marketing. I like products. Like I like software stuff. I love good prices. To this day, I still love good prices. And like we had breakfast today at the airport and they had it was a breakfast sandwich, $15. So me and Isaac split it. I was like, dude, I don't think we can do a $15 sandwich for one person. And
justify that.
Yeah. It's like all these things led up to me finally around 30, starting AppSumo.com, which was a combination of and learning from all these different things. Like, how do I figure out how to get customers? How do I figure out how to do marketing? How do I figure out how to enjoy the work I want to do in the way I want? Yeah. And that took me years to be able to figure out and now feel comfortable to also share with others.
Yeah. Were you coding the early stages of AppSumo?
Yeah.
Okay.
But even let me clarify with coding. And I literally just looked up our first site. And this is something I teach in Million Dollar Weekend and I've seen the results. So when I started AppSumo, I had a website. It took me 4 hours and it was too long. That had a PayPal button. So now today you don't even need anything. You don't even need a website to start almost every business. On the website, you hit PayPal, you send me $12, and I'd manually email you the code for the software. AppSumo.com is software deals. It's software deals for entrepreneurs. And I would just manually email the code. And because I found because the business worked, then I went and invested in like, all right, maybe I should have a WordPress site and then customize it from there. And then maybe I should get a developer. But what most people do wrong, they're like, I need a website.
Bloated MVP.
Yeah. But here's the thing. This is the craziest part about what I'm saying. Everyone who does that, this building all the website shit and hiring the people, they're like, yeah, I know, but I'm different and I need to do it. And I'm like, okay, buddy, good luck. And maybe it can work, but there's also a different path that I did with AppSumo. And I've seen a lot of people do it and I've done it with other businesses to find out if people want it and then start investing.
Yeah. It's such an important step.
But everyone
you just
like,
be
shit.
So far down the rabbit hole.
It's
and then you launch something and then it doesn't get any traction. And now you're in $200,000 and 9 months of time and you're not as nimble. You can't make as many changes. You have this kind of, you know, tail wagging the dog effect, the sunk cost fallacy that's keeping you in the project when it shouldn't be.
Hon, are you speaking from experience? Did you have one of these?
I sure did. Yeah.
Well, what's this?
I have a company called Guestio. We place guests on podcasts and we connect podcasters with guests and guests with podcasters. So it still runs this day and it's just the majority of it now is in our agency. So I have an agency that books people on podcasts for, you know, book tours or for, you know, their business to promote their things or whatever, because we think podcasts are better than traditional media at this point for those types of products. And so we make those connections, everything happen. So when I launched the first version of Guestio, it was an overloaded MVP. And I had raised some seed capital for it, and which at the time I thought was awesome, but in retrospect, it was like, it didn't need that much, you know? So I overraised a little bit, which isn't the problem that most people run into. Most people have a lack of cash. I had abundance of cash. And so we were just like, oh, we don't want to launch. Well, if we launch, we wanted to have that feature and then let's build in that thing as well. Nice. And then, we launched a bloated MVP. It's probably like 3-4 years ago. And it was a punch in the face because like we launched it and then within like 30 days, there was one feature that I was just like, we have to have that. And within 30 days, we just tabled the whole thing because people started using it and they're like, oh, I actually don't like this particular thing. And, you know, I'm not going to use it because it has that thing in it. And it was like, oh, well, I guess we got to scrap that. You know what I mean? We could have just done something way leaner. So luckily we figured it out and I did 6 years of door-to-door sales. So rejection isn't new to me. So figured out some ways around it. And then we kind of pivoted into more like, you know, managed services rather than like pure low ticket software.
Totally.
The company's still running today and does well, but you know, it was definitely a big lesson.
What blows people mind, which is interesting about what you're saying, and this is what everyone has, maybe you have to go through it. So if you're out there and you have a great idea, maybe it's for AI software, maybe it's for certain things, try it your way.
Yeah.
And go spend 9 months and all this money. But what's crazy is what stops most people from becoming a millionaire is that they never make $1.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so what's crazy with AppSumo.com, which I started for $48 in a weekend, is that now, today, we'll do $200,000 today.
Yeah.
Today, which is insane to me, right? Like this year, we'll do about $80 million top line revenue, which is unbelievable. And that all started from a PayPal button,
right,
and an email that I sent with no coding, no other people, no one, and one $12 sale.
Where'd you get the traffic back then?
The traffic for that one specifically, and all businesses, is 3 W's. That's all businesses. It's like, what's the problem you're solving that people actually give a shit about? Who are they and where are they? That's it. We overcomplicate so much of business, and that's why I tell people to do it in a weekend. Because look, everyone's busy. They already got a lot of things going on. So how do you do it with very limited amounts of time? And so with AppSumo.com, I like solving my own problems, which I already said. I like marketing. I like software products. I like good prices. And I was like, where are there people that have that problem? And it was on Reddit.com. I'm a huge Redditor, still use Reddit all the time. And I just noticed there was a product, Imgur, which is a photo hosting. Remember Imgur?
Yep.
I saw that being used on Reddit, and I saw that they had a pro version. I was like, oh, maybe I can see if they'll give me a deal on it, and then I'll just promote it on Reddit. I'll tell you, hey, Redditors, like, I got a deal on this for a limited time.
Yeah.
And I'll see if people want it. And so I cold emailed Alan Schaff at Imgur. He was a college student at Ohio. And I just emailed him. I said, hey, I want to promote it. I'll pay you $7 for it, and I'll promote it on Reddit and get you a bunch of customers and other places if I can.
Yeah.
And there's no downside. There's no cost for him. There's no downside. I told him outcome. I always think of this phrase, whiffed. What's in it for him? Mm-hmm. You're in sales. You know about this. So what's in it for them, or what's in it for him? He said, sure. I'll pay you. I told him I'd pay him $7 for every sale. So for me, I thought, all right, now I have that. Let me go post it on Reddit. Let me just say, like, hey, I got this deal.
Right.
I also cold emailed the founders of Reddit and asked for free ads.
Really?
Yeah, just asked them. Like, one of the things in the book that most people struggle with, and you've had practice with, but it's probably one of the most important parts of entrepreneurship, is asking.
Just making the ask
and practicing the ask. Like, I'm famous for this coffee challenge.
The 10%.
Ask for 10% off when you go and get coffee, but frankly, anything. If you buy, don't buy this stuff. But if you're buying dinners, if you're buying lunches, if you're doing it, just go ask for something. And the reality is, when you get the rejection, you're like, oh, it's not so bad. And then you start also feeling good about yourself. You're like, I did something I was afraid of, and I can overcome it, and I have courage.
Yeah.
And
the worst case scenario happened, which is I didn't get it.
And the best case scenario,
I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They said no.
Yeah.
And like, I still got my coffee and walked out.
Totally.
And my day has not changed at all.
Yeah. People don't ask for things, and they don't get the things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most people get what they get. They don't get what they want. And the only way to get what you want is you have to ask for it.
Yeah.
Most people hope, and they wish, and they pray.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't work. You have to get what you want. And to do it, you have to ask. And it's a practice. It's not something that I'm like, you know, even you, I'm sure you get afraid sometimes to ask.
Oh, for sure.
And it's something that you do it, and then you overcome it, and you keep practicing, it gets easier. And so I asked them for free ads, put it on the site, had the button. People came to AppSumo.com. You can go to archive.org and see it. PayPal button, send it. Made $12. I sold 200 of them. So it was pretty cool. Made $1,000 profit in a very short amount of time. And I was like, huh, this is one of the first things I've done where people were like very excited.
Yeah.
I had the same problem where the problem I was excited to solve was how to help people promote their software. Mm-hmm. And I tried other businesses to do it. And this is the thing that's so important for people starting businesses out there. Whatever kind of business, you have to be starting.
Hmm.
You have to start right now. So I started a software review site called softwaretaco.com. No one went. And then I started rewardlevel.com. I can't even explain it. I don't even know what we really did.
But no one, slight problem.
I mean, we got like some sponsorships. Like I got Shopify to sponsor. Like, they were friends of ours. They were kind of sponsoring, but didn't really work. It's like, okay. And then I tried AppSumo, and I was like, this has worked, and I didn't really have to sell anybody. I didn't have to convince anybody. It just was working. So it's like, oh, there's something here with that. And so how do you find these things in a very short amount of time?
Real product market
fit. Yeah. And then by trying, though, by starting and experimenting, failing, being like, this is not working, but what did I learn? This is not working, what did I learn? As an experimenter, as a scientist of sorts, which everyone can be, eventually led me, though. Most people are waiting to research for money, for the founder, for the great idea.
Yep.
There's no great ideas. There's just great execution.
Yeah. Well, on this chat so far, you've mentioned like 18 different things that you did from the time that you were 20 till the time that you were 30 before you started AppSumo. You know what I mean? But like, so I think there's something to be said too for like the time compression. When you do that much activity in that short of a period of time, the feedback loop is shorter.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, when you're spreading out opportunities and it's just like, well, it takes you another 12 months to get the next idea out, another 18 months to get this idea out, and you multiply that over 30 years, it's like, well, you maybe tried the same 18 things over a 25-year horizon instead of a 5 to 7 year horizon. It's like the feedback is so much. That's why I tell people when they're starting podcasts, I'm like, try to do 3 interviews a week. If you're going to do an interview, do 3 interviews, because you're going to learn how to interview people so much faster if you can just shrink the period of time in between feedback points.
Yeah.
Because that, like, it's not only increased volume, but it's, you know, shorter time until you learn something new again.
Yeah.
And that keeps the momentum of growth, like, exciting and fresh, you know, even in the midst of getting punched in the face from like failure after failure after failure, you know. But then you eventually start something and gets that kind of traction, which is like somebody say, like, how do I know if I've achieved product market fit? And I forget where it was. It was somebody, I wish I'd give them credit for it, but they were just like, if you have to ask that question, then you haven't found it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, that's one of those things where you're like, this worked.
Yeah.
I did very minimal work and did $1,000 profit in a single day. That's probably a sign that we should keep doing this.
We made $1,000 profit. It wasn't a single day. I think it was over a few days after we launched it.
Okay.
The other thing that's fascinating is the most successful people also have the most failures.
Mm. Yeah.
Like look at the people who are like, wow, this person's really done something I'm admiring or I want to do. Ask them all the things they tried before that. Like I talked to Ali Abdaal yesterday, super popular YouTuber, amazing guy. I love his content.
Mm-hmm.
Feel Good Productivity, his book. I recommend that for productivity. He started businesses at 13, all the way up to around 24, right? Yeah. He had some stuff at 19 that did okay, but at 24, he finally was like, huh, let me do this YouTube thing because I want to promote one of my businesses. Swinging and swinging and swinging and starting and starting and starting. And eventually being in it led to the part where that this action built confidence, where that action and those results led him to be able to have the YouTube channel, which worked. And now at 29, I don't know, makes a few million dollars a year.
Yeah.
You know, traveling the world and just talking about cool things that he likes.
Yeah. Which is not a bad gig.
That's what everyone should be striving for. Everyone should be striving, should, and I'll say the should word, to just live the life you want to live.
Yes.
And being an entrepreneur, it creates that opportunity. Like I can come hang out with you for the day.
Yep.
I can go work from Barcelona for, which I did half of this year, where I found my girlfriend. And it's like, what a cool life. And that's available for everyone. It's not some exclusive guru thing.
Right.
Like everyone's here and this is where they're going to be. Like, guess what? You can do, you can get closer to where you want to be much more than you realize. But you have to start. You have to start.
So you used a phrase earlier that I'm going to steal and start using a lot because I really liked it. You said that's one of the risks of not being an entrepreneur is that you, when you're talking about Zuckerberg and him fire and ultimately Facebook firing you, because most people, I like that reframe because most people think that entrepreneurship is the risk and that having a job is not the risk. But you used the phrase in the opposite, which is like, that's one of the risks. And you said it so just like in the middle of your conversation, which speaks to like the world you've created for yourself, which is you and a bunch of other entrepreneurs doing entrepreneur stuff. But I think for most people, they look at it as like not even close to the same thing. Like you're saying that it's more of a risk to not be an entrepreneur, like you're out of your mind. So if that's one of the things, what are some other risks of not being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think it's risky to have a day job. Mm-hmm. I think it's risky to be 60 years old and say, what if? It is. I met this guy.
That one.
I met this guy, Jake, recently. And he said, I've had the same business idea for 2 years. And he's got three kids. He's got a day job. He's got his own life. And it doesn't have a lot of time. So he actually, this was a crazy experience. He came and lived with me.
Really?
a month ago. And it was like, okay, let's at least give you that opportunity to do the thing. And he's like, shit, I didn't realize I could have done all this and found out in 48 hours. And it was risky. Mm. And he wanted to lead by example for his children.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, that's good, dude. That's you know, especially as a parent yourself. And so I found it risky that I don't have control over my life.
Yeah.
I found it risky that I have a day job where I didn't want to show up every day. And what that means doesn't mean you're going to be a millionaire today,
mm-hmm.
but it means you can start to lead yourself to that place. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a millionaire. Being a millionaire is great, by the way. I do lie. I do recommend it. I do recommend it for everyone out there, but it could be just you want some creativity.
Yeah.
And your risk is that you don't get any of that in your day job. It doesn't mean you have to be rich, but you can make some grocery money and you can do all that and do it in a weekend, which is available. I think other risks, I mean, really just not living the life you want.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And that's the hard part. And the thing with entrepreneurship, it doesn't have to be some big, like Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn. He's like, you jump off the cliff and then you build a parachute on the way. I was like, why would you do that? Why don't you get a parachute? Or I wouldn't want to jump off a cliff to begin with. Let's just start there. Unless it's like a shallow one and there's like water below. And so I've never taken a big risk starting my business. And all of them have started for almost no money.
Mm.
Didn't spend a lot of time. So when I started Kickflip and Gambit, which was games and payments for games, I did it while I was working at Mint.com. And then when I started AppSumo.com, which is now an $80 million a year business, which is crazy, by the way, it's crazy to me how well it's grown. And we can talk about in the book how that happened, was something I did while I was consulting at Speed Date. I was working on a dating website. I was doing product management. So while I had time on the weekend, I was like, I've always wanted to solve problems for marketing and startups and saving money.
Yeah.
But I didn't spend a lot of money and I didn't have to take a risk where I think people think, it's this big, scary thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, they kind of, if you're not purposefully seeking out, you know, connecting with stories of entrepreneurs, then you only hear what like big media tells you, and big media is only covering the outsized results opportunity or they're only talking about the Zuckerbergs or the Musks or the Reid Hoffmans. They're only talking about like this kid started this thing and now it's worth $3 billion or whatever. Like they're only talking about those. So people tend to like, if they don't actively seek out a crowd of entrepreneurs or relationships with people who've walked that path, they just think that that's it. You know, like it's either I work my job or I got to go do this insanely risky thing that's either going to be bankrupt in a year and a half or it's going to make me $1 billion. It's like there is so much like space in between like $0 in revenue in your business and $100 million in revenue in your business.
Yeah. You know,
and a lot of people exist in this like 500,000 a year to 5 million a year space that still gives you freedom. It still gives you opportunity to live the life that you want to live. It still gives you control over your, you know, schedule. And it's way less risky, like insanely, like it's like plumbing. It's like air conditioning. It's, you know what I mean? Like it's not all this, you know, you get one shot at this. And if you don't, like your family's going to be homeless.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to feed your kids.
I think risky is, you know, getting to a point where you don't have the choice to be able to spend time with your kids if you want.
Yes.
Right. Like, I, you know, ideally in the future, I'd like to be a parent. I want to have the ability, and as an entrepreneur, you do. That like I want to choose how I spend my day. So even now at AppSumo, I don't do meetings before noon. I just don't want to do anything. I want to have my mornings free. Maybe I want to work. Maybe I'll open a meeting. But otherwise, the meeting, no one does anything for me. It's not that I'm too good, but it's like this is what I can choose.
So I've designed my life.
And that's available for everyone. Right. But it does take time and you do have to start. And I made $12 day one.
Right.
You know, and 14 years later, yes, now it's definitely able to have that. And there's like a chief of staff and there's a COO who runs the day-to-day. And these things happen, but it didn't happen right away. Like even YouTube on the drive here. I was watching, I like watching my videos. And you should be proud of the work you make. Sure, be proud of your work, especially if you worked hard on it.
If you can't consume your own product, then, you know.
Yeah. How can you expect others? And I think I agree with you. I love this book. I had to read the audiobook. I was like, pretty good job, Noah. I'm proud of you when I did the audiobook.
This is good.
And I was watching my first YouTube video, one of the first YouTube videos 3 years ago. And I literally just got off a bicycle in my house. It was an 800 square foot house, a piece of shit. And I was sweaty and I was just watching the drive here and I was like, wow, I just started posting a video with my phone. I was sweaty talking about how during COVID, here's exactly what I'm doing with my cash. And a few hundred people watched it, not a ton. And I was like, oh, I like this. I'm just going to keep sticking with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's led now to, you know, a million subscribers. There's a team we spend, I invest, AKA lose $250,000 a year on the team because I do believe long term there's going to be value around that. But that just started with me shirtless, sweaty after bicycling in my room with my phone, which is available to everyone.
Yeah.
And didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a fancy camera, any of this kind of stuff.
Right. Which is really the ethos of the book.
That's exactly what we're teaching in the book.
Regardless of what it is, if it's a YouTube channel, if it's plumbing, if it's a software, if it's a website, just take a small amount of action this weekend and see what happens.
Yeah.
Do something. Like,
yeah.
In the I like the quote, in the absence of clarity, take action. So many people think that it's like the opposite. They think that you need like rigid clarity before you can take any action toward the result. It's like, well, how do I know what I'm going to go for? And it's like, well, sometimes the action is what provides the clarity. You're not going to know unless you take a step in that direction. You're like, actually, that sucked. I didn't like that. Let's go this other direction. But if you just sit there, then you'll never get any clarity because you never understand fully what it is you actually want out of the pursuit that you're deciding to go after, which is something I spend a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, let's say someone wants to cook well. You can only watch so many YouTube videos on cooking. You eventually have to get in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so don't make it, what happens to a lot of people is they don't feel ready. Don't have money. I don't have these things. It's like, well, let's break it down to smaller elements. Let's think about, hey, is this a market size that's big? We talked about AppSumo. Part of the reason it's now become almost $100 million revenue business a year is because we picked a good market. And we talk about that and I walk through people like how to pick markets.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be some giant thing, but it's like, all right, what's the smallest thing I can do to maybe even get feedback? Hey, I have this idea. For example, I'll give you an idea of something I want. One of the software products, I hate paying subscriptions. That's literally why we have AppSumo.com. It's software tools without subscriptions for solopreneurs. And one of the tools I hate paying for is DocuSign. Right? So just take it as an example. I don't know. You guys like paying? Do you use DocuSign or EchoSign or one?
Dropbox. HelloSign. Dropbox.
Oh my God. Dude, even though I'm a multimillionaire, like I still like hate the subscription. HelloSign, you get three free ones. I use HelloSign. Yeah. I just create new accounts instead of doing it. It's just really pathetic, actually. You know, and that's the whole thing about probably there's certain things I should spend better time on and just pay for it. And instead, though, I'm like, okay, that's a product that maybe we can promote on AppSumo and sell it, and it could be a seven-figure, million-dollar business. So instead of building a lot of things, how could I find out today? So what I could find out today is I could put out a tweet. I could message a few friends. I could ask people like you, hey, do you want to pay me right now for a DocuSign alternative? I'm going to build it. It's going to take me a few months, but let me go validate if this is actually something people really want. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we do in chapter two, which is like, what are problems and things you have? And we have different ways to come up with ideas. Make sure there's $1 million opportunity. Making sure, like, if you're going to work hard, make sure there's $1 million that you can make in it.
Yeah.
Double check your business model, the 1 minute business model. And then let's go actually get some feedback to see if real people within your zones of influence want to buy this stuff.
Yeah.
And then later down the road, yes, I can show you how we've now run a sizable business.
Sure.
But it's now within a day I can find out if this is a product people want. Because I've done it the other way, sounds like you, where I spent 6 months building a product for Disney. We didn't have an agreement. And then I went to them and they're like, yeah, you know, it's just something, it's not really a priority, but feel free to come back to us. Right. And that's a common thing, no matter what kind of business you're in, versus you could find out right away, like, put down a deposit, put down a payment, I'll refund it. Hey, why don't you pre-order it, whatever it is. And there's other ways of validating, but that's definitely the one I think is the most effective. Like, let me find if I can get a real customer right now today, which doesn't make it such a scary thing to then start and be like, oh shit, I can actually now go build it and I have real customers.
We've talked a lot about your knowledge base here. We've mentioned a couple of the relationships you had, but since this is Travis Makes Friends podcast, I do like to talk a little bit about your kind of overarching philosophy about the relationships that you keep in your life. And the question that I have now asked, I don't know, 500-600 people is who you know or what you know, which one of those is more important and why?
Oh, who? Yeah, that's not even a question.
Why do you think?
Yeah, there's just so much more smarter people than me out there. Like, I've been very, I think one of my skills is finding smart people.
Yeah.
And looking for the, one of the things I teach in Million Dollar Weekend is how do you find them early? Like, almost, I don't want to say 99%, but a lot of my net worth, a lot, like big numbers. And I'll walk through some examples just because of who I know. Some examples of how people can copy that, to be very clear, is how do you hire elite advisors to support you in your journey? Because a lot of times, like, look, if you hit me up and be like, can you do marketing? I'm like, no. Like, I have my family,
yep.
I have my work, and then I have my own projects that I'm doing. And so it has to be significant. If you hit me up and you say, hey, I'll pay $10,000 for an hour, yeah, I'll probably talk to you. And that is what I do with the lead advisors. And every single person in our executive team at AppSumo, finance, people team, revenue team, operations person, they all have an elite advisor. And then I have my own elite advisors. So I have, and I pay them a lot per hour. And you don't have to do that to begin with.
Sure.
But that's a way of getting a 10,000 hour person for a very affordable price. So I have Moody Glasgow, CMO of Zapier, CMO of Glassdoor.com, VP Marketing at Executive Arts, the EA game company. Mm-hmm. So he is an advisor. I get to talk with him every week.
Yeah.
And he basically tells me all the things that I don't want to hear. That's the part that's also interesting. It's like a lot of that, when you get around who you know, it's like, you want to do this? Damn, that's not what I was going to do. It's like, yeah, that's why you're around.
Yeah, right.
And there's just so many people in my life. It's noticing what I'm good at, which is starting, which is promoting, which is marketing, and then supporting myself around people that have other advantages and where I'm not. Maybe it's operational. So I have the GM of Indeed, Indeed.com, the recruiting software, Rajatish Mukherjee. He gives me like a lot more organizational thought. Mm. He runs a 2,000 person org.
Yeah.
Andrew Chen, one of my best friends, early advisor at AppSumo. He's a VC at Andreessen Horowitz. Mm-hmm. So he's a lot more like, hey, you're not a $1 billion company, you're failing, which sometimes I'm like, chill out, dude. You know, but he's really thinking, how are we scaling? We're not scaling fast enough, we're going to lose. And so it's balancing that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it is, you know, can you find people? And I didn't have an advantage with that. I just had a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I can pay you to talk with you about what I'm weak at. Yeah. So that's one way of doing it. And I say the other opportunity about who is, how are you finding the people before they get big?
Yeah.
And in the book, I walk through my process, but one of them is just like, how do you find pre-fluencers? Mm-hmm. For instance, one of the popular guys now is Danny Miranda. He's like, he's got a popular podcast.
Yeah, I know Danny.
You know Danny. How does everyone know Danny? I think it was Danny's first show.
Yeah, actually, him and I were talking a little bit about that one time, and you were one of the names you brought up that was like, yeah, Noah gave me a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking, and so the question is, well, how did you find him? And so a lot of my success, like even my Twitter, my LinkedIn is Sylvie and this guy, Jay, who run my social media. They run Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Jay is 17 and lives with his parents. I have to have a permission slip to hang out with this guy. Yeah, you know, like I'm like old enough to be his stepdad. And Jay Yang is phenomenal. Everyone should check him out on Twitter. And Jeremy on our team noticed him. And I encourage that. You know, it's like, how are you encouraging others to think like, look for just someone doing something different.
Yeah, yeah.
Look for who you watch on YouTube. Look for who you like on social media. And even just send him a compliment. It doesn't have to be a big expectation. Like,
sure,
what should I send him? Just be like, yo, I like your stuff. I literally do this today. Like, there's a guy, Rampage Poker. I like his stuff on YouTube. He doesn't reply to me. But I still message him like, hey, yeah. I really like your videos.
Right.
And I do this because I enjoy it. It's not because I have to.
Right.
But that has led like to Jay Yang. He's now, we pay him monthly and he runs all of our Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. Hmm. And same thing with Dan Miranda podcast. I just thought, I noticed the people who are doing something I like, and I just connect with them. I'm not necessarily doing it with a big expectation, but that has led to Tim Ferriss, who I'm going on a show to talk about the book, one of the biggest business podcasts. Lewis Howes, super huge show. I helped promote his stuff years ago when he was doing like LinkedIn courses.
Right, right.
So it's kind of noticing people early on, sending a compliment, and people get this backwards and it's hard to do this, but is there anything you can do to help them?
Yeah.
And we all, but the problem, that's the same thing as business where like, don't build this stuff. Everyone knows that, but no one fucking does it.
Right.
Everyone knows like, oh, I should probably help him, but we're like, okay, I have my selfish need right now.
Totally.
Yeah. And so it's balancing. Is there a way to get your selfish need met and maybe help this person?
Right.
And it's doing that super early on before they're getting a lot of attention, like Ali Abdaal. Mm-hmm. Met him 3 years ago when he had like, I don't know, 100,000 subs. It was very easy to talk to him. And now at 5 million subs, it would have been a harder thing to do.
Right, for sure.
And I'd say lastly, who you can ask for referrals. So remember what I told you I did early on?
Yeah.
One of the things I'm still do this day, I like it. I enjoy it. It's one of the best things in life is meeting interesting people, asking like, who else should I talk to for podcasts?
Yeah.
Who else should I hire that might be good? And that's how I've gotten a lot of different hires. How I've made like cool friends, how I've brought people into like different ecosystems.
Yeah. Well, and even at the beginning when you didn't have money to pay people or you didn't have maybe as big of a name to get responses in DMs or whatever, you're still running networking events. You're still going out to coffee, meeting people. And then these people end up doing huge things anyway. It's like you put yourself in a culture of people doing shit.
Yeah.
Like somebody eventually is going to do something really cool. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're in a culture where everybody's just going to the bar and drinking every weekend, then the odds of like one of those people doing something amazing in life is probably not going to be super high. But like if you're putting together an event or a dinner and you're inviting people who are working on something, even if they haven't made it yet, just like we have this synergistic common goal of doing something bigger than what most people want to do.
Yeah.
And you get a bunch of people like that in a room, you do that consistently, and you do that consistently over a long period of time. It's just some people are going to come out of that and do some really, really cool shit, which is, I mean, you're the perfect example of that for you specifically with AppSumo, but then also like the people you worked with at Facebook and then the people that you brought into these lunches and then going out with Ramit Sethi before he, you know, wrote anything. And then like it speaks volumes because that ultimately is what leads to all the other successes that you're able to have.
It's
kind of like these multiple points of opportunity that exist within your, you know, world where it's just one text away now. And it's somebody
who most people
would pay 10 grand for. Now you can just text them.
Which is, it takes time for that. It's not something that happens immediately. And most people, you've heard like you're the average of 5 people, which is, it's an okay one. I think it's also what I've been thinking more about is like, you're the average of your radius. And so are you in the right radius? And I feel fortunate that I lived in Silicon Valley during like the hype of living in Silicon Valley for my 20s. And so I was in that right radius. And now I would say, how are you just in the space? How are you in the space of what's cool for you? Not for what Noah is or not what Travis is, but for yourself. And so for me, being in YouTube and just putting out videos doesn't mean you have to be great, but putting out, being in that kind of creator area, I get it. Then start connecting with other people. And more people want to meet someone doing than someone not doing.
Yes.
Like I'm more likely to respond to anyone who I'm like, at least you've put out some videos and you've stuck with it. Okay, cool. I'm a little bit more likely to say, hey, I respect what you're doing. Maybe I don't meet, but at least I'll acknowledge it.
Yeah.
So be in the space and do stuff. And guess what? That might create a magnet for other people.
Yeah, no, totally, dude. This has been an awesome conversation, man. I want to be respectful of your time. I know you got some other stuff to do while you're here in Vegas. But Million Dollar Weekend is coming out on what day?
January 30th.
January 30th. So by the time this episode comes out, this book will be live. If you have not picked up a copy yet so far in this interview, please go pick up a copy right now. Million Dollar Weekend. I mean, this guy's been doing it for decades at this point. He's relatively successful, I would say, with a $80 million a year company. And even though he doesn't like ghosts, we'll forgive him for now, even though he's going to come back to me in like a month and send me a picture of the ghost he's drinking. No, dude, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. Where can people go besides picking up a copy of the book to learn more about you and consume some more stuff that you're putting out?
Yeah, for everything, if you want more templates, if you want examples of step-by-step of like how do you check the market size, how do you do a one-minute business model, a lot of step-by-steps that's in the book, go to milliondollarweekend.com.
Perfect.
I have a bunch of free resources that everyone can go and take their own 48-hour challenge to change their life in 48 hours.
MillionDollarWeekend.com, guys. Go pick up a copy of the book. Go check out some of the free trainings and resources that Noah has over there. There's a lot of people that teach this shit, but there are a much smaller pool of people that are actually really good at it, and Noah's one of those people. So if you're going to go learn this weekend something, I recommend it to be this. Noah, thanks so much for coming on, dude. This is fun.
Thanks, Harvey.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet, and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.